Hello, and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
Yeah.
No, but he is my favorite conservative.
Oh, thank you.
Before we jump into this week's show, I want to thank all the viewers and listeners for their feedback and comments. However, one thing we are seeing is that we're not getting a lot of live comments during the broadcast, even though we know you're watching. But as soon as the show is over, we are getting inundated.
Yeah. You know, I think that's actually because of our current cancel culture.
Yeah.
That, you know, we understand that, you know, tuning into a show that has the word conservative in the title can be daunting for some people. So we appreciate that you're here.
Yeah, so we're working diligently on establishing our locals community, which will be a safe space where we can engage with our fans one-on-one without the fear of retribution.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What is locals?
Yes, so locals is the way I explained it to Edward.
Oh, that one, yes.
It's like OnlyFans minus the sex and nudity.
Okay.
Yes, but right. It's safe. So it's great. Locals is owned by Rumble. So it's not owned by sort of the big tech giants of Facebook. So, you know, we're not doing a Facebook group because, let's be honest, a Facebook group that is labeled conservative would be revoked right away.
Well, that and your data is not safe there.
Exactly. Yeah. So we are working diligently on our locals community and we will let you know when it goes live, then you can interact with us personally after the show.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. We'd love it.
All right. So, Edward, what is this week's topic? I know you really thought about this.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know where I got it from, but it just kind of popped into my head. It's the Democrats' good intentions always lead to disaster.
Isn't that what they say? The road to hell is paved with good intentions?
Yeah, yes. I think so. So, we're going to have a couple of examples here that I want to talk about.
Okay.
And just go over because they're actually in the news here.
All right.
Currently. So let's start with Uncle Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Yes.
Bernie Sanders.
I keep telling everybody he needs to do more impersonations because yes, he's so good. All right. Bernie, what's up?
Bernie has introduced legislation called the 32-Hour Workweek Act.
Okay.
32 hours.
As someone who works 50, 60 plus hours a week, I don't really understand it, but keep going.
Yeah, that's called part-time, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. So he says it's time to reduce the stress level in our country and allow Americans to enjoy a better quality of life. Yes. Now, here's the best part.
Okay.
A 32-hour work week, but 40-hour pay.
So there's no loss in pay.
Correct.
And I will say, as a business owner, and owning a nonprofit is owning a business, this is a little scary.
I mean, really, it's such pie in the sky idiocy. And somehow that Bernie thinks that everybody can just take a day off.
Yeah.
Businesses, you know, let's run the local restaurant 4 days a week instead of five, right? Or whatever, however many, you know, that sort of thing.
But Bernie has worked really hard in his life.
Well, he has. He's 82 years old.
Yes, he is.
And he's never had a job outside of politics.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So
he doesn't get it.
Oh, he gets it. He just doesn't want to be a part of it.
No, I mean, he doesn't get it as a business owner. He doesn't understand
not.
The effects of that.
No, yeah. I mean, what would this do to our economy in our country? Right. I mean, we're going to reduce worker output by 20%. What would that do to GDP?
I'm guessing it would reduce it as well.
You might think so. Yeah. It's such an idiotic pipe dream. But here's the problem is, you know, 15 years ago, Bernie Sanders, 10 years ago, Bernie Sanders was the crazy uncle in the attic.
He really was.
Absolutely.
Until 2008, until he challenged Hillary. That's when it started.
Well, 2016.
Oh, sorry, 2016.
So we're talking like 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Yeah, you're right.
And every one of his ideas for the previous decades that he was in the House or in the Senate were shot down as
crazy.
Unbelievable, laughable, you know,
yeah.
Go do something else and just leave it to
I will say one thing in Bernie's defense. One thing.
Okay.
is Bernie does stand by what he says. Like, I don't know that Bernie, and I could be wrong, so please let us know. I don't think Bernie has ever sort of flip-flopped on his views. Like you said, his views were always out there. He was the crazy uncle in the Senate. But now, when he challenged Hillary in 2016, and I really think he captured sort of the millennials, the younger millennial generation, and they were enamored by him. And those views that were so crazy started to become mainstream.
Yeah, you remember the Bernie Bros?
Yes.
Right? So any idiotic college
student. And they were Bernistas.
The Bernistas. I did not know that.
Okay. Yes.
But yeah, you've got idiotic college students that will glom onto anything that sounds like, hey, maybe less work, more pay, or right? That haven't actually fleshed things out in their life yet.
And yeah.
I mean, I can't blame them. They're young and stupid, but it elevated Bernie in the Democrat Party to an equal with every one of their leaders, which is scary because now his views are mainstream Democratic platform. And
So can you give some examples maybe in other countries where they have adopted something similar and what's happened?
Well, yeah, of course. Bernie even brought up France. You know, France has a 35-hour work week. Okay, well, that's nice. But a little bit of digging, actually, The Week magazine put out some statistics on
I love The Week.
You do indeed.
Or I did.
Yes. But the net disposable income, household income in France, them working 35 hours a week and us working 40, theirs is $34,000 a year. Ours is $51,000 a year. So if you want to live in a society that's maybe back to 1950s productivity, fine. But
I think a lot of people want that. I really do. I think a lot of people do.
Maybe. But what this is going to do is it's going to make the cost of things here, production, if factories are only running with 32-hour weeks, what are they going to do? Jobs are going overseas or to Mexico or wherever. So, you know, you're increasing the cost of labor.
Right.
What else are they going to do? They're going to automate.
Absolutely.
Right?
And you are Amazon seeing that. Has taught us that.
Yeah,
yes.
You are seeing that everywhere.
Yes.
So, you know, the pipe dream of, gee, let's have more time just to ourselves. And, you know, work is actually good for you.
Yes.
It's been proven that
gives you
people,
purpose.
Yeah, the people have purpose in their life. You may not have the perfect job or anything like that, but you are going out, you're doing something, you're putting something into society that's needed.
Yeah.
And you're getting paid for it. And I think we've lost that where people just think, let's just all become artists. It reminds me, you know, in communism, Karl Marx wrote, workers would be liberated to hunt in the morning, fish in the afternoon, raise cattle in the evening, criticize after dinner, without ever becoming a hunter, fisherman, shepherd, or critic. So basically, you know, this is the, I hate the quote, but have your cake and eat it too. You know, so you can have everything you want, but you don't really have to do anything for it. You can just sit around and let other people do things. And that's the problem with a Bernie Sanders, who, by the way, is a multimillionaire who has multiple houses, properties. Yes. So, you know, when Bernie, you said earlier, Bernie, you know, was consistent in his views. Well, yeah, but his socialism / communism, by the way, socialism is just, it's a movement point because it always leads to communism.
Yes. Okay. And Bernie's not sharing those millions with others.
Correct.
Even if he travels domestic, right? He doesn't fly private. No. He's not sharing his millions with other people.
Yeah.
I just want to also throw in here, you know, there are four ways to earn money in society in general, four ways. Again, if I've missed a way, let me know. Number one, you can inherit it. A lot of people do.
Lucky that Sperm Club.
Yes.
Yes.
You can very rarely, but sometimes you can win it. There are lottery winners.
Powerball.
That happens. Yep. Powerball and Mega are way up there in the US.
Right.
And you can steal it. Happens a lot. Yes. Hopefully you don't get caught.
Today more than ever.
Yes. Yes. So we're going to get to that later. Or you can earn it. And that is the most common way. And the people that I know who are millionaires or multimillionaires, and I'm not talking about the billionaires, the Mark Cubans of the world, or the Elon Musk. I'm not talking about them, but it still applies to them. The people that I know who are millionaires have worked their asses off to get there. They have worked hard, and whether they've started businesses or they invested early or bought real estate or whatever, but they have worked their asses off to get there. And I think there are just a lot of people in society who are resentful. And because of that,
there was a statistic, and I forgot to put it in here, and it was from, I think, Inc. magazine, and it was about how many hours CEOs of top companies work.
Right.
And the minimum was 62 and a half hours per week.
That doesn't surprise me.
No. So it's, you know, you're putting in a lot of time, especially if it's your own business.
Especially at the beginning. Yeah.
But these are CEOs of top companies. So they're not, you know, they're not skating on the, you know, 30 hour week and let everybody else handle it.
Yeah, exactly. So and you know me, I don't know how not to work.
No.
I have a problem with it.
Yes. You have a deep problem of relaxing.
I do. Take a day off. I admit it. And in fact, I've been told by people at conferences that I'm never going to retire. Like, I don't know how to do that. And I like to think I could semi-retire, but it's hard to imagine retiring.
Your off days are traveling to a conference or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they are. all right. So I know you have another example of this.
Yeah. This is from our good friends over at Reason.com.
Hello.
So Seattle law mandating higher delivery driver pay is a disaster.
Again, this is good intentions.
Yes, correct. Okay. So in 2022, Seattle City Council passed an ordinance called Pay Up, mandating a minimum earnings floor for app-based food delivery drivers in the city. So we're talking Uber Eats, Uber Eats, that sort of thing.
There's a couple others.
Basically, it would take it from where they're $19 an hour right now to a minimum of over $26 an hour.
Okay. Right?
And it is, and I don't have it on here, but the formula, people do a little research on this and look at the formula that they came up with.
We'll link it in the show notes. It's hilarious. Yeah,
we'll link it for sure. So in response, obviously, delivery companies were forced to add quickly a $5 fee on delivery orders covering the city because of the sudden cost of labor increases.
Just remember, those costs get passed down, people. Yeah. They will get passed down, whether it's on services or goods. Yeah. So tell us what happened in Seattle as a result.
Well, immediately, people were starting to get hit with these charges, and they're deleting these delivery apps from their phones.
Okay.
So they're seeing these companies are seeing people dropping off very, very quickly.
What else?
In fact, Uber Eats experienced a 30% decline in order volume just in the first 2 weeks.
Okay. Wow.
Yes. DoorDash reported 30,000 fewer orders within the first 2 weeks of this taking effect. So that's a lot. And this is just 2 weeks.
That's huge. And that's Uber Eats and DoorDash. I mean, that's not just one app. So what happened with the drivers themselves?
Well, yes. Now remember, this is to help drivers earn more money.
Yeah.
The whole intention here. What's actually happened here? Well, as an example, a driver who made $931 in a week this same week, saw his earnings drop by half to $464 the same week right now.
Okay.
So I don't know about you, but getting your income cut in half.
Yeah, I'd find another job.
But hey, you're making more per hour.
Yeah. Yay. What else? Who else got hit really hard by this?
Well, in addition to those drivers, their hardest hit have been the local mom and pop restaurants, right? Mm. They've seen their deliveries, you know, dry up because now nobody's going to order from them. So they're not making a profit on that. And here's the really sad part is the city's elderly and disabled population who very often depend on these delivery options are really suffering because, you know,
they can't afford it.
You cannot afford it. Yeah. An example was somebody ordered a cup of coffee to be delivered, And with all the charges, delivery charges, all the pay up and everything else, it was a $12 cup of coffee. By the time it got to him, it was $32.
That's crazy.
$32.
I don't care how good that coffee is. That coffee. Is crazy.
A sandwich was over $40
just
to get delivered. So you're, you know, you have these great intentions of let's just tell people they have to do something. And that's the same thing with the Bernie Sanders is these city councils and people on the on the Uber left that think that all they have to do is go ahead and put something in place.
Right.
And everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And it's not magic, people. There are laws of economics that are in play.
I want to say hello to the people who are watching live and feel free to comment in real time. I want to make sure I turn on the comments so we can see them. I'm going to add this next part. So after passing this pay up package, and if you're just joining us now, we're talking about this ordinance in Seattle specifically. The city council then decided that implementing this minimum earnings portion of the ordinance, so actually making it work, would require 5 new full-time government employees in the Seattle Office of Labor Standards. And they're going to expand this to 9 full-time employees by 2027. And that's going to be an additional $1.2 million to the city per year. It's going to cost the city per year.
But they're expanding government. Yay.
Yeah.
Because we have to regulate, right? The regulators got to regulate.
Well, yeah. You know, it's really interesting is that, you know, I lean more libertarian. You're more conservative Republican. I know little R. But it's just, I think for both of us, I mean, the libertarians out there are like, you know, less government all the time. But I think even you would agree, like this just, again, just has devastating consequences.
It does. And the our leaders, air quotes, don't understand this. Our leaders on the left that don't understand this, it's mind-boggling how they just think that they can put down this edict and say, just do that. It's fine. People will figure it out. No.
I know you have one more example from history as well.
Well, yeah, you know, these two examples are micro examples.
Right, and right? Current.
Yeah, let's look at macro.
Okay.
The biggest, the most devastating policy of good intentions with disastrous results is, drum roll.
Okay.
Go. The war on poverty.
Yes.
Brought to you by the Democrat Party with Lyndon Baines Johnson back in the mid 60s.
Okay.
Yes. And this is where thinking they're doing something really nice to help poor people, poverty stricken. Now, mind you, this is when they started the welfare checks.
Okay.
Coming out.
But didn't that work initially?
Well, but here's the thing. If you look at poverty in this country, it had been on the decline all by itself through charities and private donations around the country.
Again, we're talking prior to the 1960s.
Prior to the mid-60s, yeah. Yes. And it had been on the decline every year, year over year, every year. In the first 7 years of this new war on poverty.
With welfare,
it continued to go down.
Okay. And then what happened?
And then we started to see it go back up and up and up and up.
So why did that progress, or seemingly progress, why did that stop?
Because human nature and the giving handouts to people teaches them to be dependent on you.
Okay.
And I would like to think that the initial impetus for this program for welfare was to help poor people come out of poverty.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure that was the intention.
I would like to think that was their good intentions, but I know that they had to realize, and LBJ especially,
well, yes,
that making people dependent on your party, which is a key Democrat standard,
okay,
makes them totally dependent on you, and they will vote you into office time after time after time.
He did actually say that about the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, but they created this whole generation, a new class, if you will, of people that are dependent. And once the initial payments went out, people thought, oh, this is great. Well, they got used to it. Then their kids start to grow up. All they see is the check coming on the third or fourth of the month, whenever it is, and they're waiting for their checks.
But President Clinton,
William
Bill,
Jefferson.
Yes, Bill Clinton, not Hillary, because she never made it there. But President Clinton reformed welfare in 1996. He worked with the Republicans to pass what was called TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And one of the things that act did, and I know a little bit about it, I had to write a 15-page paper on it, was that it basically limited, because the more kids you had, the more children, the more money you got. And so it put a stop to that. And also it limited how many years you could depend on welfare. And how did that come about?
Well, before that, you know, what you just said there about you were getting more money for more kids that you had.
Yes.
Created this entirely other crisis of fatherless children.
I know.
Because it encouraged women to have children without their fathers present because they got more money.
Yes.
But the way Clinton decided to try to fix it, or actually did a good job of it, because when the Republicans took control of Congress
in 94
with the Republican takeover for the first time in 40 years, mind you. So for 40 years before that, the Democrats controlled the House.
Right.
So Newt Gingrich came in. And the Republicans started pointing out the infamous now welfare queens.
Right.
And this was a group of welfare recipients that were living better than most people.
Yes.
You know, getting all this money and assistance, and it was pissing people off. And the Republicans really pushed this forward in the news cycle. And Bill Clinton knew he had to act because he wanted to look like he was being tough. And he did this TANF, which... actually,
it
was
worked.
A good thing. Yeah,
it
and
worked,
it really
yeah.
made people actually go to work. You couldn't stay on welfare forever.
And there were work assistance programs too to help you find jobs and things like that. So
correct.
And then what happened?
Well, unfortunately,
it lasted for a while.
It did until 2009, 2010, and Barack Obama ended it.
Did he really?
Yeah,
I knew that. So, that was rhetorical, but yes.
Yeah, that was a big FU to the Clintons, I think, that this is my party now. And, you know, Obama, well, it's the pandering to a voter group is all it is. And he did that full force and decided this is what we think people want. Yeah. And if we give this to them, guess what? They will continue to vote for us.
Yes. And I'm going to share a story that it's in my book, so it's nothing private. But when I was 23 years old, I was diagnosed with a very serious illness. I was in the hospital about a week and then had to undergo medical treatments and radiation. I was raising my younger sister. I had custody of her. I was 23 at the time. And so my sister was 9. And my friend said, you know, you've got to apply for welfare. And I didn't want to. Like, I just, the whole thought of it just, I was, what's the word I'm looking for? Abhorred by it, I guess. But they said, you have to, because I was not able to work until I recovered from this very serious illness. So I went to the welfare office. This would have been in 1996, so the mid-90s. I don't think this TANF had taken place quite yet. And again, I'm probably going to get some pushback for this, but this welfare worker took one look at the color of my skin, the fact that the fact that I had a college degree, and the fact that the child I was raising was not my biological child, even though I had custody of her, and I was immediately rejected for welfare. Immediately. And guys, I didn't have $20 in my bank account to my name. I relied on the kindness of my friends, and in some cases, even strangers, to make sure that we had groceries. And so let's put it this way. Didn't try to do that again. It's a complete waste of time.
Well, let me ask this.
Yes.
Would it have helped if you said, I'm a card-carrying liberal Democrat?
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'll vote for you.
I don't know if the social worker at the welfare office would have cared, but you know, I mean, I didn't want to be there. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed, but I was desperate and I was very ill and I needed help. And I couldn't even scrounge together 5 quarters for my sister's lunch. I mean, it was a really tough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That was serious. All right.
Now we're all depressed.
I know. Now that we're totally depressed, we see you watching live again. If you want to comment real time, we are happy to feature your comments. If you don't, we understand. But let's lighten things up with a really good, this one's good, guys. This Week in Woke. What do you have for us, Edward? Because this is a good one.
Well, we're going to go back to the left coast again.
The
left coast. We've been in Seattle. We're going to go a little south down to California.
Oh, my former state.
Yeah, this is from our friends at the Daily Mail.
Oh, okay. Hey, Daily Mail.
Daily Mail. I love the Daily Mail. It's a British newspaper.
Yes.
But they are not afraid to go after anybody.
Yeah, they're,
and
no,
they
they're
really
not.
Don't. They do great investigative reporting.
That's true.
This is a little on the lighter side.
Yeah, this is actually, this is sort of like, this is like the Babylon Bee. Like, really? This can't be true. But yes, it is, and yes, we will put it in the show notes.
So, headline, backlash as California rolls out Ebony Alert to report and find missing Black women and children, with critics saying some people will ignore them altogether.
When Edward first told me this was our Week in Woke, I thought he was joking. I thought he was making it up. I was like, you're making this shit up. Like, this is not true.
So quickly from the article, it says, a new alert for missing Black women and children in California is receiving backlash as some critics say that it will embolden people to ignore the messages. The so-called Ebony Act, signed into law Monday, just went into effect January 1st. This was from like October when they passed it.
Okay.
Is a completely separate notification system from the already existing Amber Alert.
You forgot the most important part. Who put this into law?
Governor Harejal Newsom.
Yes. Okay. All right. Yes. And then let's go back. The Amber Alert was established. I believe it was a woman whose child went missing, and it's named after her daughter, Amber, who went missing. I think ultimately had been killed.
Yeah.
And this is a nationwide alert. And the only other thing we have besides Amber Alerts is we have Silver Alerts, right?
Right.
Silver is for
old people.
For old people. Yeah. Of any silver color, by the way. Yes. And Amber for any child, by the way.
By the way, I believe that Amber Alert, the young Amber, young girl, was actually taken out of her bedroom through her bedroom window by a killer. And it was just horrible. Yeah. So it got a lot of attention for good reason. You know, when a boogeyman actually literally comes into the night into your room and steals, takes you.
There's not just an Ebony Alert. There's also another one in California. And this sounds made up, you guys, but we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes, it's called the Feather Alert. Feather.
And see, when Edward told me this, I'm like, are they talking about birds? Like, I don't understand. And tell them what the Feather Alert is.
Indigenous people. Americans is, you know, and the interesting part of the other alert, the
Ebony
Alert, excuse me, thank you, a little brain cramp there, is the children, the Black children, can be up to 25 years old.
Okay.
And now, I know when you have kids, they're always your kids.
Yes, but that's not true.
At 25, you're not a child.
Right.
So, yes, but it's interesting.
So how did you first hear about this?
Well, it's funny because actually, you know, I do this for us, for our audience, so they don't have to watch Bill Maher. But Bill Maher actually brought this up on his show this week, and good for him for doing so.
Yeah.
You know, his take, which I agree with, is to stop pointing out people's differences.
Yeah.
He was actually, I'd like to think it was very altruistic and racially sensitive, but he was actually concerned about Democrats' propensity to pander to the different racial and ethnic groups, because polling now shows that people aren't as obsessed with race as they were only a few years ago, and that it's a losing strategy for the Democrats.
Yes.
So that's kind of what he's concerned about. It's like, stop doing the race thing.
Yeah.
It's not working
anymore. Not working. And some really famous Black celebrities have spoken out.
Yeah, he used a couple of examples. The rather hunky, I believe.
Yes, very sexy.
Idris Elba.
Yes.
He said, as humans, we are obsessed with race, and that obsession can really hinder people's aspirations, which is true. If you're just constantly thinking about race, it just sets you back.
It really
does.
I'm gonna do the next one,
please.
So Raven Simone spoke out and said, I'm tired of being labeled. I'm not African-American. I'm an American. I don't know what country in Africa I'm from. My roots are in Louisiana.
Yeah,
girl, you go. Great. I love it.
Yeah. Then he actually used the Morgan Freeman quote. And Morgan Freeman, a number of years ago, was on 60 Minutes. And I think it was Mike Wallace interviewing him. And he said the way to stop talking about racism all the time is to stop talking about
it. You mean to stop talking about it all
the time. And he says, I know you're a white man. You know I'm a black man. We don't have to obsess over it and constantly refer to each other as such. And good for him. Good for him. But the huge problem that's out there, and especially, well, only on the Democratic side, is the race grievance industry is huge.
Yeah, and it is
deeply, deeply embedded.
And I think it's gotten worse, much worse.
Oh, yeah, because people make a living off of pointing out our differences and driving wedges between us. And we have to stop. It has to stop.
Yeah, and just shout out to Morgan Freeman, Shawshank Redemption, one of the best movies ever. And it's about a friendship between a black man and a white man.
Or how about a friendship between men?
Between men.
What?
And it actually has nothing to do with their race. They're just in prison at the same time. So, yes. Yeah, great movie. Anyway, anything else you want to add, Edward?
Phew. No, I'm spent. So to speak.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us live today. We do see you out there. Please follow us on all social media platforms. You can join us live most Sundays, including next Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, U.S. Coasters. We talked about you a lot today, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. If you are listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, Monday, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening right now. And it's available everywhere. And like we said, we are building our locals community, and that way you can talk to us one-on-one and talk to each other. And our goal is to debut that in May. And you will find all of this information on our website, myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.